Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue.
Live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue on heritageradionetwork.org. You can also download and listen to the show through iTunes or Stitcher. I'm your host, Lady Sue. And what do? When I'm not hosting Word of Mouth, I'm out and abouting, having the very conversations that you hear on my show, and working with my clients, which include chefs, sommeliers, big brands, startups, all those doing what's most delicious and innovative. And today's in-studio guest on hashtag people we like, we'll welcome restaurateur Chris Cannon. He is the, shall we call, director-producer behind Alonda, a new French Venetian restaurant right off of Union Square. He's just opened up a week ago with chef-owner partner Chris Jekyll. And did you know, there hasn't been one restaurant Chris has touched or owned without a 3-star New York Times rating. He's got a lot of history. Lots of openings on this week's show. Before that, we'll head to the Green Market and talk potatoes with Adam Starwitz, formerly of Moss Farmhouse, Hearth, and Momofuku Co. And now he's exec chef of the brand new North River, cooking up comfort food we all want to eat, but with tasting table precision. After that, we'll catch up with Chris Cannon here in the studio. And then to close, we'll wind it down with Chris. He is super knowledgeable and passionate about wine, particularly Italian wines. And he's got a thing for wine had in context. So let's head to the Green Market with Adam now. I'm at the Union Square Green Market with Adam Starwitz. He's the executive chef of the brand new North River, a restaurant in the East Village. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Lady. How are you?
Good. Well, thanks for joining me on this day that it's raining wet snow.
It's beautiful. Reminds me of Rochester. but not too cold, but snowy.
Where you're from.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, you're totally umbrella-less, and here we are standing under a canopy so that we can have a civilized conversation.
It's soothing, yeah.
So tell me a little bit about North River. What's the vision there?
Sure. My background's tasting menu and fine dining food. The owner, Colby Zito, and general manager wanted to have food that was fine dining quality, but a comfortable space and definitely affordable. So, which is what I want to eat anyway. So basically, he gave me a chance to cook the food that I would go out and order if I was taking my wife or our group of people out to eat. So it's pretty fun.
Your favorite potato people aren't here today.
Not on Friday.
Yeah,
Healthway's here Mondays at the Union Square Market. And I'm buying, I'm trying to get Desiree from them. We've been using Katahdin, Irish cobblers.
They're called Katahdin Irish cobblers.
So we were first using Katahdin potatoes, and they were great. They make a great French fry. They're good for baking. And we were using rose golds for puree. Each potato has a very different flavor, so I really encourage people to come out here and buy different types of potatoes. Each one has something different to offer. In the restaurant, we're looking for very, very specific taste, texture, sizing, appearance. And I think people, if you like a really potato-y, earthy potato, try rose golds. They might be different than the russet you've been using or the Yukon gold. Everyone knows Yukon golds. They know russets. They know fingerlings. There's a lot of other potatoes out there, and they all have different
okay.
pieces. From this last cold spell, I was trying to get Desiree's, and Desiree is a European potato that I think would be even better for fries, and they couldn't get them out of their storage because it was so cold. So I mean, that's something that happens when you're buying local New York produce and you have a polar vortex going on. Sometimes you can't get Desirées, but we may do with some rose golds and yellow fins, and actually the yellow fins were pretty good. So I might use those in the future for a few different things.
So they just like had them in a cellar, and then they couldn't open the door.
Yeah. So I mean, they've already dug most of the potatoes, but it was just so freezing that they couldn't get. I mean, they have hundreds of pounds of potatoes.
Yeah.
So hundreds of pounds of freezing cold potatoes they couldn't get to Desiree's. But you know, he made it happen. He came to the market with some yellow fins. He said, "Try these."
Yeah.
We gave him a shot. They're fantastic. So but hopefully next week we can get some Desirées.
So here on Mondays only.
Yes.
And so what potatoes have been proven to be good for what preparation at the restaurant?
The Katahdin and the Yellowfin are absolutely fantastic for fries. We do a triple cooked chip.
Mm.
So we boil it first, make the potato really, really soft, and I also season the inside of it.
Yep.
And then we fry it once. Dry
how do you
out.
Do that? You put it in the. How do you season the inside?
So the water, we use a ratio of 20-1. So for every 20 quarts of water,
yeah.
A full quart of salt.
Okay.
And you boil the potatoes till they're soft.
Yeah.
Almost falling apart.
Yeah.
The more cooked they are, the more crispy they're going to get.
Oh.
Which is the longer you cook them in water, uh-huh. The crispier the potato will get.
Why? Wait. Okay. So,
you break up the structure of the potato.
Yep.
And when you do that fry step, you can actually see. All the potato has all these little indentations in it,
yeah.
And then when you do the second fry, those get really, really crispy.
And that's because
and they stay crispy.
And that's because when you know just the why.
When you boil a potato and you hydrate all the starch granules and they expand.
Yep.
They increase their surface area,
mm-hmm.
And it allows them to get more crispy when you fry them.
Right.
Yeah. So we're serving those triple cooked chips with. Yellow fins at the restaurant right now, but hopefully we're going to be using Desirées.
Okay.
And with these things, that subtle difference between, they're both very similar potatoes.
Yeah.
But a little difference is a big difference as far as I'm concerned. So,
and so the Desirées are much more what?
I haven't actually worked with them yet. You know, it's awesome that he even has these. I've heard about, it's like a potato you've read about.
A legendary
about.
Potato.
Yeah, well, you've read about them. Like, oh, Desirées, yeah, okay. And when he said it to me, he's like, you want Desirées? I'm like, you got Desirées? He's like, yeah, I'll get them for you. And then,
oh my gosh.
Unfortunately, the cold couldn't get them. So yeah, that's what's awesome about this green market too. You come here, you talk to the people, you say, "Look, the was awesome." Yeah, I'm trying to get this fry. He's like kind of like looks at me. He has this like, he's like, "You want Desirées?" I'm like, "All right, yeah, I've heard," and luckily I've heard about him. And I'm like, "Yeah, let's give him a shot."
Thank you so much, Adam.
Pleasure.
Hey, welcome back to the studio. Want to tell you a quick announcement. I'm throwing a party, a midwinter's disco slumber party, that is at Playland Motel. That is New York City's only beach motel. It's this January the 31st, 9:00 p.m. With $99 gets you a bed, a pizza, a glass of wine, a seat on the party bus. Music is by my fellow Heritage Radio hosts, Greg and Darren Bresnitz of Snacky Tunes, and they'll be playing jams and we'll be dancing. You can just come for the party, so you can just get the party bus that leaves from East Village or Brooklyn. Up to you. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll be dancing into the wee hours. Join us. And the info is at playlandslumberparty.splashdat.com/word of mouth. Hope to see you there. Let's cut to a quick commercial break, and after that, we'll welcome Chris Cannon on the show.
You are listening to Tom Cruise here on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Did you know that pollinators are needed for more than 2/3 of the world's crop species? Most of these pollinators are bees. However, North America's bee population has been steadily declining since the 1990s. Whether you live in the country or the city, you can show your commitment by hosting a hive in your backyard or even on a rooftop. The beekeeping movement is growing, so you're sure to find swarms of folks who can help you find your way.
Learn more about the ways you can help be the solution at wholefoodsmarket.com/sharethebuzz. Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Welcome back to the studio. I'm your host, Leyte Su, and you're listening to Word of Mouth with Leyte Su on heritageradionetwork.org. And now we're going to welcome Chris Cannon. I want to give you some social media info. He's at Cannon Eats, so you can keep up with him on a minute-by-minute basis.
Not so much.
At Alonda NYC, that's A-L-L. ONDANYC. I'm at Leyte Su, LEITIHSU, as usual, at Heritage _ Radio, hashtag WOM Show, WOMSHOW.
That's a mouthful.
Welcome. Thank you for braving the tri-borough traffic.
Oh, it was wonderful.
To join us in the depths of Bushwick.
I brought these bottles of wine. I drank half of one, I think, on the way.
Yes, you came really well prepared. I mean, he didn't just bring the bottles of wine for us to taste. He brought 6 glasses. A whole box.
You know, the chef, you know, who might have some wine with us.
Wonderful. Okay. Congrats on the opening. Okay. A week in. I didn't, like, necessarily mean to, but I found myself gravitating towards Alonda on both Friday and on Monday. And then found myself staying for a really long time, which this is the kind of place that it is, especially when Chris starts pouring you
lots of wines.
Lots of wines. how did you end up first partnering up with Chris Jekyll, other Chris?
Well, you know, Chris and I both worked with Michael White for a short period of time, and we both, you know, left working with them, and subsequent to that, you know, we kind of connected on LinkedIn,
back LinkedIn.
And forth. Hey, you know,
I love it.
It's not only Twitter, you know, LinkedIn, whatever. It's great for business.
Oh, I love LinkedIn. No, thank you.
So he basically reached out to me and said, hey, listen, let's have some lunch, and we had lunch downtown and had a really great lunch. Talked a lot about food, about, you know, our experiences, et cetera, et cetera, and
a debrief.
Yeah, and shortly thereafter, you know, he was like, you know, would you like to help me open up this restaurant? And I was like, yeah. I mean, he's a really talented guy, really nice guy, has incredible technical chops, and, you know, to work with somebody like that is the kind of thing that I like to do because, you know, me, I'm a couple years older than him. I have a little perspective. I can help. You know, he really reached out to me to say, I would need you to help me to do this.
I love that. And just, I haven't had a chance to properly brag about you yet, but so I didn't know you cooked at La Chuberta, a 2 Michelin starred restaurant in France.
Mm-hmm.
But also you were GM at Palio and Remy, and then owner at Judson Grill, and then you opened Alto and La Impera with Scott Conant, and then Convivio and Maria with Michael White. And I hope I described you correctly, but there's been no restaurant that you've owned that has not gotten 3 New York Times stars.
So, well, yeah, pretty much. Basically, all the ones where I had principal ownership or, you know, major ownership interest in, yeah, all 5 got 3 stars.
Incredible. And then 5 Michelin stars in total. I mean, not that stars, well, they do matter, but they don't, but more that the consistency in your track record from a... Yeah.
2 restaurants got best new restaurant in the country from James Beard and, you know.
Amazing. So. But also, you're kind of an odd bear. You went to Brown University to start out with. Like, well,
yeah,
well,
that's proper because the Bruno bears are what Brown's about. So I am an odd bear. No.
Well, Brown people tend to be...
You know, slightly independent, quirky. Kind of iconoclastic, a little bit independent thinkers, you know, and...
choose your own adventure, your own curriculum.
Yeah, you can do that if you want, and, you know, people like Yale and everybody used to make fun of Brown students because of that, but if you went to the school, there's some of the most highly self-motivated, really brilliant people you'll ever meet, you know?
Yeah, so what was this going to Brown and then going, how did you decide, oh, well, cool, I'm going to go do food?
I decided when I was like 7 or 8 years old that I wanted to be a restaurateur, and... But, you know, in New York, I kind of got the sense that, you know, to be a real sophisticated restaurateur in New York, you had to have a real education.
Wow. You know, you had that clarity of vision?
I went to Brown. I'm strange.
I want to be more like you with the clarity of
vision. You know, there's very few people that decide when they're 8 years old what they want to do. And, you know, I'm 52 and I still feel like I'm 8. So,
good. Good. So, you went to Brown to be like a real human being kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's excellent. Well, what'd you study?
Double major in economics and international affairs.
Wow. Okay. So
made which a good... works for the restaurant business.
Yeah.
You know, international affairs, you're dealing with all these different cultures and things and whatever, and economics, you know, there's some business involved.
Chris himself is an owner in Alonda, mm-hmm. the other Chris. And then you are a consulting
managing consultant,
I called you a producer director.
That's basically what it is. Yep. You know, it's basically coming in and getting paid to direct a movie or direct a restaurant and kind of work through the concept, the name, the feeling, you know, talk to the architects and, you know, kind of give them an idea of the vision for the place, you know, mm-hmm. in terms of how it should feel to customers and do the wine list. You know, pick out all the plates and glassware with Chris. And,
yeah, give it that X factor that is so crucial in whether or not a restaurant does well in the, you know, sort of busy and cutthroat New York City restaurant environment.
Yeah, but, you know, it works with Chris and I, it works because we both have the same name. You know, so so we're two of the same people. Now, he's very... respectful. He's also, you know, I think with me, he knows he can speak his mind and say what he wants. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'll just tell him, listen, this is my opinion. If you feel strongly the other way, it's your restaurant and, you know, you do what you want. But, you know, I'm going to go on record saying this is how this should go. And, you know, sometimes it goes the way I want to go. Sometimes it's somewhere in between. But, you know, at least we bring up subjects and, you know, really kind of fine tune things. And,
and say, hey, that one thing yesterday restaurant. Night could have been better, and that's cool. It must be liberating to, you know, as I've learned as a consultant, you can, you know, even more so speak your mind without having your heart, like, sort of smashed or, you know, it's liberating to be a consultant.
Yeah, because in the end, you can just say, hey, bye.
Ciao.
And then your buddies and you come in and they're all happy to see you at the restaurant and you can be a customer and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. There are other partners in the... in Alonda.
Well, you know, Zach Chattero is really the principal person, him and Chris Jekyll. And Zach is a cool guy, great guy, mm-hmm. really smart, went to UPenn. One of the things I like about him is his humility. He's a person that, you know, kind of has a vision of what he wants in the restaurant business, and what he wants is really high-quality stuff at a reasonable price. He tries to find the best people to work with, and he basically stays out of the way and lets us do our jobs without being a backseat driver second-guessing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
you know, he'll bring up things, but it's not like, you know, you have to do this, you have to do that. You know, he's like, you guys know your stuff. You know, you've gotten 3 stars, you've gotten 3 stars, you know. I'm just here to help out, you know, any way I can. But, you know, it's really interesting to work with somebody who really doesn't want a lot of credit. And that's the way he wants it. He likes to be quiet and do his thing, and, you know.
It's funny, the thing about sometimes, you know, companies will hire consultants, but then sort of be like, hey, I'm paying you for your advice, but I don't want any of it.
That happens a lot, I think, you know.
Like, you're wasting your money, man.
You know, and basically, you know, when I sat down with Zach, too, it's like, listen, you know, this is what I do. You know, I'm going to take this as if this was my place, you know, because honestly, if my name's on it, it's I take ownership and, you know, so, you know, he understood that I was going to be, you know, on top of everything and doing everything.
You know? Right, because even if you aren't an owner in it, your name, I mean, geez, you know, I've seen a lot of chef restaurateur partnerships, and they can be just super interesting, you know, passionate and also completely complicated, and it sounds like sometimes the thing that works out the best is if the restaurateur partner is, you know, way in the background, mm-hmm. and is, you know, and you appear to be that kind of person, but now you're being so
well, you know, it's like, was I in the background? I always did the wine lists, and, you know, I was on the floor,
got the beverage,
you know,
stuff,
and,
yeah,
and I was always working the door in my restaurants, and so people knew I was there. And, you know, I mean, I always believed that, you know, the chef in this day and age is driving force.
Everybody wants to talk to the chef, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's like he's a, you know, the star actor, you know, he's the mm-hmm. talent, mm-hmm. they say. But, you know, a restaurant's more than just food. A restaurant is the environment, it's the tone you set with your staff, it's the look of the place, it's
the beverage list.
And it's basically, I think, my job, you know, and I think guys at Alonda get it, is that, you know, I kind of go around and keep everybody happy and try to be like, you know, the Pied Piper and the wine, and, you know, keep it light, keep it fun, you know, keep it flowing. You know, you're trying to make every night kind of into a little bit of a party.
Oh, absolutely. You're throwing a party every single night. And so I kind of, not that I'm perfect at it, but I giggle a little bit, you know, when people who have never worked in the restaurant business throw a party and they're just like, I have a party tonight. But, you know, you throw a party every single night.
As you go into it longer and longer in the restaurant business, you start, you know, anyway, in life in general, you start realizing that basically you can really control nothing.
Okay.
And the only thing you can control is your demeanor, your disposition, keeping from being nervous in front of the staff, you know, not getting stressed out and screaming because it doesn't help anything, and being, you know, a person that is, you know, a steadying influence for everybody in a fun way, you know, in a humorous way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing how that can keep people relaxed and doing their job right. And to me, that's kind of like what's the most important thing to do is that, you know, it's like there's a lot of people looking at the restaurant now, and, you know, a lot of people would be really nervous and very tight in how they deal with stuff. And it's not, you don't need to be, you know, it's like you can just be yourself. And, you know, for us, it's kind of trying to express the joy that we have in food and wine,
mm-hmm.
in a very clean, pure way that is not self-absorbed. It's, you know, here it is. This is good stuff. Try it.
Every single person coming into the restaurant yesterday was, like, greeting you by name. You know, sounds like a lot of friends coming
35
by.
35 years in the restaurant business in Manhattan, you know, you tend to know a lot of people.
I like that. Okay. So, I don't know. How about, it sounds like you've had a lot of experience in picking partners, and that's, like, so important, and I would say in personal and professional life.
Yeah, I've been fortunate to work with some really great chefs, and,
yeah.
You know, it didn't always work out. You know, the problem with the...
People get divorces,
you know. It's like, you know, all of a sudden you have big success and people's, you know, your paths start, you know, diverging, and it happens. And you can't, you know, nothing is forever. And, you know, once again, you know, I work with these guys and they're, you know, Scott Kohner was a great chef. And Michael White was a phenomenal chef. And, you know, the time that we had where we really were working very closely in a collegial fashion were amazing times, you know, going to Italy and tasting there and trying wines and going to vineyards together and going out to dinner, you know, once or twice a week, you know, in Koreatown or, you know, out, you know, in Brooklyn or wherever, you know, those are the times I'll always remember. And, you know, and that's really how it should work. You know, you should team up with a chef and really try to spend as much time together as you can to have a basically a clear vision together of what the restaurant should be.
Mm-hmm. And I just know you as the guy who enabled some of the best pasta I've ever had in this city, which I really appreciate.
Because I have a culinary background, I can basically, you know, all the chefs that I've worked with kind of know that I know what I'm talking about in terms of technical execution of food.
Right.
You know, balance of acidity and fat and all those things and, you know, texture of the pasta, you know, and I can intelligently give them a critique that, you know, they can act on. So, you know, it helps to have that so that you can really, you know, direct them properly.
What have you learned about picking partners, chefs or otherwise?
What have I learned about picking partners?
And personally and professionally.
Well, you know, partnerships are very difficult. You know, it's like a marriage without sex. So that says it all right there.
Okay, so how do you manage that? Because some marriages no longer have the sex.
Let's not go
as there. I've heard. not you, just in general. I've read articles.
No, you know, it's. I mean, now I'm a big project I have in New Jersey. I'm the principal. Managing
Excellent.
Partner and mm-hmm. owner, you know, eventually owning more than 50%. So, you know, it's over time acquiring a dominant share of your business so that you can pretty much do what you want. So
basically you're saying the best, you're like, let's just go into business and die alone.
No.
Oh, that's what you're saying?
No, not really.
The new project in New Jersey is so exciting. I saw some photos. You showed me some photos mm-hmm. on your iPhone that has a very funny case. It's like a Lego.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I told you I'm an 8-year-old.
I tend to trust friends who have funny iPhone cases. There's something about that.
I think it's, you know, a little bit self-deprecation. You know, you don't take yourself too seriously. I try not to take myself too seriously.
Especially adult men. It means that you can be trusted, frankly. Mm-hmm. I have a business partner, a former business partner, and a great friend at Jera Marketer. He's a social media guru, and he has a different colored one every day to match his pants. I mean, who wouldn't trust that guy? So tell me more about that project.
It's in Morristown, New Jersey. It's mm-hmm. a nationally landmark building called the Vail Mansion, and it was Theodore Vail's home and art gallery. Mm-hmm. It was built between 1916 and 18. He was the president of AT&T at the time and the man that basically created the long-distance monopoly. So he was really the first media mogul in the United States. He never lived there because his wife died during construction. He never moved in.
Hmm.
And he gave it to his once he died, it went to his niece, who didn't know what to do with it, and it was sold to Morristown, where it was the city hall for about 65-70 years.
Didn't know what to do with it.
It's an interesting building, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how old she was, but you know, probably she was in her 20s or 30s, whatever. And, you know,
me. But what can you describe, just in words, because it's hard for me to even, it almost looks like it's from another country.
It's done in a Italian kind of palazzo, you know, style. God. And it's huge, like marble structure. It's got a huge, big room all made with like granite around it on the first floor that has columns, and that's going to be an oyster and wine bar.
Oh.
And at the back of that, there was an old library that's going to turn into a cocktail bar, you know, really high-end cocktail bar, beautiful cocktail bar.
Mm-hmm.
On the second floor, where their sitting room and bedrooms were, is going to be a fine dining restaurant, 75 seats. Mm-hmm. And then we have a 100-seat private room with its own bar called the Ratskeller in the basement, which is going to be really cool.
So is there going to be, like, a? It sounds like a sprawling spot. It, is there anywhere to, like, is it like an inn at all? Are you going to have rooms?
There's a Hyatt around the corner.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. No, I'm thinking staycation because I'm throwing a party at the end of this month at in the Rockaways at Playland Motel. So I'm thinking my mind is in staycation mode.
Uh-huh.
Just because... because I'm looking for a break. So Hyatt, okay.
Yeah. So conceptually, the restaurant is a American farm to table kind of thing. We're doing a lot of Italian influence to the food. I purchased 20% of an oyster farm.
Yeah, I read about that. That's so
in Maniloki, New Jersey. A young guy had started it about 3 years ago, and it was destroyed by the hurricane. And I read about it. So I visited him, and we started talking. I liked him a lot, and I said, listen, you know, I'll, you know, recapitalize you and get you going and, you know, be a partner, and I'll get very inexpensive oysters at the restaurant, and it's a great thing.
Completely win-win.
Yeah, win-win for everybody. Really cool.
Well,
kid's great.
You mentioned that you'd also want to maybe one day make wine.
Hey, you know, one of these days.
Yeah, we'll I mean, another money-losing...
proposition. Yeah, yeah. Listen, I there's so many people that have been doing it 30, 40 years that do a great job that, you know, it's a pipe dream. I don't think I'll ever get there, but mm-hmm. maybe. You never know. Never say never.
You mentioned New Jersey, though.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think New Jersey is the Garden State. It's some of the best vegetables in America. You know, three-quarters of the green market in Union Square is all from New Jersey.
Hmm.
And so if
not
you know,
quite as
if
sexy tomatoes, as Vermont.
If tomatoes can grow really well, you know, there's a good chance that you can plant grapes and grow them very well. It's a matter of, you know, analyzing microclimates within the state and mm-hmm. figuring the right exposition and place to that
the
you
right
can do
grapes.
Something good. You know, it tends to be a little bit too humid for grapes, so you can have a lot of problems with rot and stuff, but I'm sure there are areas in New Jersey that aren't so humid that...
Well, you would be that guy who would do something contrarian in wine.
Yeah, probably. You know, it's fun. I mean, to me, it's like, you know, I grew up in Manhattan and I moved to New Jersey about 10, 12 years ago. And, you know, even my attitude towards New Jersey was, oh, my God, you know, there are mutants in New Jersey. It's like, you know, what's going on? You drive through the refineries and it stinks. And but when you get out a little further into where I live out in, you know, Mountain Lakes, and you go to Burnsville and Mendham and the horse country back there, which is like all around where the restaurant is, it's some of the most beautiful land in the country, and it's fantastic, and it's only 35-40 minutes from the city.
So by car?
By car.
Okay, so if I were I live in Williamsburg, so how am I going to get to your new palace?
Well, hopefully you don't go rush hour like I did this morning. I mean, you can just get, you can take a train.
Okay.
Out there
how
in
long
Morristown,
would that take
that's an
from,
hour
okay.
from the city. So.
Okay. All right. So I'll do a little day trip and eat a lot of oysters at a great price.
Yep.
Which is, will be very exciting.
Well, that's a, you know, it's something that I'm, you know, doing things at a proper price is something that I'm big. You know, wine should be not overly expensive.
Your food. List is fantastic. I mean, it's like 75% of the wines on the list
are under $60.
$60, which is just fantastic.
Yeah, and they're really interesting and different. And, you know, I have a reputation for picking really good wines and stuff. So, you know, my attitude is like, just try it. If it's $60 or $45, try it. You know, if you don't like it, we'll pour it at the bar. And, you know, most people, they can't believe that they're having the quality that they're having at that price.
Well, you pick the thing with wine is it's, people forget it. In the world, it is a surplus good. And then everybody sort of follows the masses and they go for the names that they already know to be good. And so
yeah,
you've got
basically,
good taste.
You
can arbitrage
certain
that.
Producer becomes commoditized and then it's just, you know, the price goes up by 50-80%, and then
now we have the Chinese.
Yeah, well, it's true. I mean, you know, top Bordeaux now, because of the demand all around the world, they're nice wines, but they're not worth really, you know, inherently what they're being charged. I mean, what people are charging for it.
And we will mention that even, you know, our friend Christina Turley, her family's wines, you know, have such great name recognition. But once people start going after it, then you know, then you have people following the masses again. I like that you're picking wines that nobody would notice. And then I think, you know, people might follow your list. And then you'll be like, oh, done with that. I already
Well, you know,
people.
I mean, to a large degree, a lot of the producers, they're, you know, producers making under 1,000 cases, mm-hmm. you know, they're small farmers, you know, one of the wines I brought today is a trattoria in Sardinia, where they started making wine for the trattoria 40 years ago, and now they're making only wine for selling in the restaurant, but also abroad, and it's, you know, 30-year-old vines, it's amazing, I mean, intense flavors, really delicious, and in Sardinia is considered one of the best wines in the island,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I buy it for $16 a bottle, mm-hmm. wholesale, and it's, if you poured it blind for a sommelier, they'd be like, oh my god, wow, what is this, you know, they'd think it was an $80 or $90 bottle of wine,
mm-hmm.
you know, but that's the kind of stuff I look for.
And in your wine, you know, your wine seeking, you're probably seeing a lot of it in your travels and through certain suppliers.
No, I mean,
that know that,
you know, there's a bunch of suppliers, yeah. Especially in the Italian vernacular that I've known for like 30 years, and some of which are not recognized really, and they should be recognized because they do an amazing job of doing what I was talking about, finding unique products at a reasonable price. You know, one guy in particular, Rob Mackin, he has a company called Artisan that's in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, you know, over the years, he's just refined his palate more and more and more, and I think he's the best Italian wine buyer in the country. He's really great.
We had a couple from AI Selections yesterday. Want to shout out to those.
David Weizenhofer is amazing, and Livio Panabianco, who specializes in Sicilian wines, mm-hmm. and my friend Dino Dantawi, who mm-hmm. does a bunch of great wines at Vignoli. And, you know, if you go to some of those guys, also Omni is a great distributor. You know, they really try to specialize in small production, really artisanal, very much regionally specific and accurate wines that are fantastic.
Did you grow up drinking wine? What did your parents do?
My dad was a financial planner. My mm-hmm. mom was a housewife, but she was Greek and Belgian and studied at Sciences Po in Paris at the Sorbonne.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was big into food, and she taught me how to cook. And
wow.
We used to drink wine at home all the time, and we spent summers in Greece and, you know, drinking Retsina, which is one of my favorite wines that in Greece, everybody that's wealthy turns their nose up at it because it's like for the peasants. But, you know, it's this wine that has pine resin in it. And originally it was, the pine resin was there because when they were shipping wines in amphora, they would either put olive oil or pine resin on top so it would not oxidate the wine. So it became, in Attica, near Athens, this kind of wine, Retsina, became like, you know, a flavor that they really got into. And it's a flavor that's really interesting, goes really well with Greek cuisine, with, you know, fish and, you know, salty things that they have, lemon and all that stuff. It's awesome.
Okay.
I didn't bring one of those. I should have brought one of those, but...
Oh, well, you're just making me salivate at...
I've got three brothers, and usually every restaurant that I own, I have a private stock of Retsina for my brothers, so when they come, they can drink
it. That's sweet. Okay.
Yeah. Hey, you know.
Well, you're definitely passing on the food loving to your daughter, who's become quite the sophisticated
she
little
loves,
eater.
Loves food. She... I took her to Red Farm about a month ago, and she did a restaurant review where she interviewed Ed Schoenfeld, and it was
Are you serious?
It was hilarious.
That's hilarious.
God, I'm like telling her, don't go into business, please don't.
All the strife. So she just one time she told you, hey, your salmon's overcooked.
Yeah, I was cooking salmon for a group of people, you know, that were coming over who weren't foodie type people. And
yeah.
Normally I cook it, you know, I cook it medium rare, so it's nice and pink in the middle.
They were not your friends.
And I grilled it and I made sure it was cooked through because I knew they were going to send it all back otherwise. And my daughter's like, yeah, you overcooked the salmon. What the hell's going on? Shh, quiet. Don't say anything.
You know, before we open up the wines you brought and do a little in-studio tasting, I've been going around being like, hey, everybody, I love this place. It's Japanese-Venetian. Japanese-Venetian.
Well,
what the?
I would not say it that way. I would say it's a Venetian restaurant with some Japanese influence to it.
I know, but I'm Venetian-Japanese. I'm really into those two words together.
If it drives a lot of Japanese clients to us, I'll be very happy because they're some of the best clients you can get.
Oh, they love food.
They love food. They're very open to suggestion. You know, they're they're fantastic customers. I love them. So
that
would be great.
Okay, so I'm, you know, I know that you and other Chris have a lot of conversations, and you say, hey, like, no, let's be brave. Like, you know, you can do it, Chris.
Well, that was my job as a director, kind of. You know, he was getting a little bit of stage fright, you know, about 4 months ago, and I was like, listen, all right, you can do this. You have the technical ability, you have the taste, you have all these things, and, you know, everyone else was involved in the project, too, was a little bit afraid of the dreaded F word.
The dreaded F word.
F word, fusion. Oh. Which, you know, from the 80s was, you know, something that...
That's a bad word.
Was, you know, it started out, it was okay, and then it turned into this really bad word. And I said, you know, listen, the philosophy of the food has to be that you want to remain really true to Italian philosophy and flavors, but you'll use some techniques from Japan and some products from Japan to accentuate those flavors and push the dial, you know, an inch over this way. So, yes, you can see that there's some Japanese influence, but in the end result, if you closed your eyes, it's Italian food.
So my then very last question is, I don't get why people would balk at Japanese Venetian food, because, you know, Jean Georges, French, Japanese-y, fusion-ish, you know, is so well-loved. I mean, I don't know why baffling to people.
You know, it's one of those things that over the years, you know, Italian food kind of came in and... As opposed to French food, which was kind of pan-French and very creative, taking influence from all over the place, and that was accepted, Italian food came into the United States as very regionally specific. I mean, the first cuisine that came in was Tuscan cuisine, and that was a big deal. And then it's moved throughout Italy, but it's very much either it's a southern Italian restaurant like Sicilian, or it's, you know, Osteria Marini, Emilia-Romagna restaurant. And any time you would put another influence in, people would be like, well, that's not Italian. You know, what are you doing? And, you know, I always felt philosophically that was kind of very short-sighted. And, you know, food is cultural. You know, it's historical. But it's also a living thing that's constantly changing and, you know, and becoming different and taking influence from all different places. If you look at Italian food, I mean... In Veneto, there's influence. There's curry. There's black pepper that came from the east. There's rice that came from the east. There's influences from Sicily that came up when the Venetians were, you know, a mercantile power. And so it's a totally multicultural area where there's influences from Germany, from Slovenia. There's from everywhere.
Absolutely.
Know? So, you know, to say, well, you can't use, you know, Asian products, well, that's kind of what they've been doing in Veneto for, like, centuries. So, you know.
So we're going to take the last couple minutes of the show to wind down.
Wind down.
Oh, my God.
I'm a cheese ball. I just needed these little, you know, these little...
That's why we get along.
Yeah, totally.
Don't take yourself too seriously.
Absolutely, and that's and also because you pour me delicious wine. So what have we
got here?
All right,
so first of all, we have a Vermentino di Gallura from Sardinia, and the grapes Vermentino from Tani as a producer, and it's their Tierra, which is basically their best grapes, 30-year-old grapes. And it's just kind of... enormous kind of honeyed complexity to it, of great acidity, a lot of minerality. And beautiful with seafood, like with sea urchin pasta at the restaurant, this would go amazingly well. And this is a typical thing. This is like a $48 wine in the list. And to find something of this quality, like in France, with this amount of depth of flavor and complexity is really difficult. In the United States, it's totally impossible because, you know, and that's driven by the price of real estate and labor and all that stuff.
Business.
But this is also a wine made, as I said before, it's by a trattoria. They started making wine 40 years ago, and they sold in the restaurant and then sold the rest of the grapes to the local co-op. And over the years, they started making better and better wine, and then they decided, forget the co-op, we're going to only make our own wine. And, you know, this is a wine that's a totally, you know, probably 1,000 cases of wine, and it's all a work of love. You know, it's like, And of great terroir.
And who brings this in?
That's Rob Mack.
Artisan.
Yeah. Artisan wine.
Yep. So to close then, Chris, I said, hey, give me one, let's give everybody one wine tip, and you said context.
Well, yeah, context is very important. I think I spent a lot of years serving big wine collectors and people that are really into wine, and they would tend to bring in, all the same kind of thing, big Bordeaux, big Barolos, and taste them all together. And there's no context there. You're basically tasting things with the same level of intensity, so you can't appreciate the wines for what they are. You need to take wines, I feel, and put a lighter wine and then amp it up a little bit, maybe an orange wine, then go to a light, rosé, then to a lighter red, then to a heavier red. And as you do that, each wine you can focus on better, and you can really appreciate the nuances of the wine better. When you're tasting all these wines together, you don't get that. So that's a large part of what I try to do on the wine list, is modulate the wine so that people can really get into it and understand it.
And as you're swooping around, making sure that everybody has a full glass.
We try.
Yeah. So then you'd recommend people come in and...
We have, including dessert wines, probably 35 wines by
the
glass.
Okay.
And so
you can try,
we're very happy to pour half glasses for you. You can try different things, and, to us, it's like trying to get people to understand the joy of wine and the joy of food.
Mm-hmm. So, Alanda has to me, one of the most interesting wine lists in the city, and especially if you love Italian wines or if you love other wines, and then Italy will be full of surprises. That's what's fun about Italian wines, always.
This wine list, as in most wine lists, I found, I think, 6 grapes that I'd never heard of, which makes it really cool for me. It's like you're discovering hidden gems that you never heard of, and it's like that's really what makes me feel really passionate and youthful about what I do.
Oh, thank you so much for joining me.
That's great. Let's go back to the restaurant.
Yeah, we're going to go have a bite at Roberta's now. Thanks so much for listening.
That's going to be terrible.
Coming up in a couple of weeks, the founder of Umami Burger, Adam Fleischman, Anita Lowe of Anissa. Until next time, eat well, be swell.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.